You know, the very thing that we're doing this morning, as we'll see when we get into some of this subject, is something that is good for us. We're not going to get into a lot of detail of that, but we're going to see that some of the influences that they had, or the negative influence, is what is not good. When we left off in our last class, we were just getting into section 5 on your lesson titled Judges 1 through 3. So in section 5, we had just basically started looking at that. And so if you go into Judges 2, we'll start over there, Judges 2. In the last class, we were looking at these cycles that was explained in 2:19. And we saw this reoccurring idea, which we're going to see more once we get into chapter 3:7 all the way to chapter 16. We're going to see this cycle going over and over. But this sin and suffering, supplication and salvation. So we saw this idea, and it spoke to that in 19, kind of explaining that and talked about how the Lord raised up judges. So in verses in Judges 2:20 through 3:6, the Lord states that He will no longer drive out before them any of the nations which Joshua had left when he died. So remember that in sections chapter 1 through 18, basically we were seeing their success. God was allowing them success. And then in verse 19, we see things are starting to change in this section. So in verses 19 through 36, and this is chapter 1, because I know we started talking about 2, but in chapter 1, 19 through 36, it said that, let's go to verse 19. Now the Lord was with Judah, and they took possession of the hill country. So it says that the Lord was with Judah, and. So now we know this term "and," it can mean that it's about to talk about something different, but I don't think that's what it's doing here. It's not listing something different. It's using a different term, but it's building on that thought when it uses "and" here. It's explaining that thought or confirming what it just spoke about. It says, "And they took possession of the hill country." So the Lord was with them, and they took possession. Okay? And now we're going to see something else taking place in these verses 19 and following. Because it also says, in 19a, it states that the Lord was with Judah. 19b is different. You have this "but." Okay? So it starts with "but." Said that, "but they could not drive out the inhabitants." Now we know from this section specifically, it's talking about their, because of their chariots, their iron chariots. But as we read through the rest of these sections, we're going to see that that's not the only thing that it's speaking of. There's a reason why they're not going to be able to do this. So, in verse 19, I'm just going to read some of these terms that we see in 19 following. It said, could not drive out. And we saw that was because of the chariots. But in 21, it said that Benjamin did not drive out and have lived with. So talking about that, going to have these inhabitants in there amongst them. 27, the Canaanites persisted in living in that land. 28, they did not drive them out completely. 29, you see the term "drive out," Ephraim drive out the Canaanites, said lived among them in Gezer, did not drive out, talking about Zebulun, in verse 30, and then lived among, 31, you see it again, did not drive out, and 32, lived among, they did not drive them out, and 33, did not drive them out, lived among. So we see this reoccurring statement that they had the inhabitants of the land there with them because they did not drive them out. They had to live with them. So why is that? What reason does the Lord state in this section as to why He's driving them out? Now, the answer's in chapter 2 where we started. So if we go back over to chapter 2. In chapter 2, verse 22, it says, in order to test Israel by them, talking about these other nations, in order to test Israel by them, to see whether they will keep the way of the Lord, talking about Israel. So we're going to have these inhabitants around you. You're going to have this influence around you. It says, whether they will keep the way of the Lord to walk in it as their fathers did. So we understand that walk is the idea of how they will live, the life that they will live. So to walk in it as their fathers did, that is, it the way of the Lord, or not. So they're going to have these influence around them. They're going to have to make a choice. Are they going to serve the Lord of their fathers? Or are they going to allow the influences around them to have them serve other gods? So in verse 23, it said, so the Lord allowed the nations to remain, not driving them out quickly. Okay, and we looked at that idea of quickly in our last class. In the next chapter, Judges 3, in Judges 3, 4, again, we see this idea. It says, and they were for testing Israel to find out if they would obey the commandments of the Lord, which He had commanded their fathers through Moses. Now, this section ends with verse 6. So verse 6, after explaining these things, it says, and they took their daughters for themselves as wives, talking about the other nations, and gave their own daughters to their sons and served their gods. So it explains that they did some things that they have been warned about. You know, warned about the influence of these other nations, but they were intermarrying. And it shows the result of it. You know, because of this, they served other gods. And that was the whole reason that God was trying to keep them from doing that. So, you know, that made me think for a second. When we consider ourselves, you know, consider us as Christians. You know, is that something we can learn from? You know, because the Lord allowed influence, and that's what I'm looking at right now, is the Lord allowed them to have this negative influence, this bad influence. And basically, it was to test them. So, here you go. Here's this influence. Which way are you going to go? So, the question is, what does their heart reveal? And that's a question for us. And we see this where we're warned of this, especially us as Christians. But think about teaching our children when we're, you know, because again, when we look past at the other classes we've had, we saw this idea of being leaders, being, you know, teaching our children things. So when we're teaching our children, do we warn of influences? I know we're adults, so that can't affect us, right? Yeah. It can, but it's especially important to instill that in our children, because they don't recognize what the negative influences can do to them. We see it. We try to talk to them. They might not. You could probably tell them something over and over and over, and then Fred next door says something, and then, oh yeah, this new thing they never heard of. So we try to teach some things, and it's just the importance of that, because we see here the importance of our spouse. We know that our friends that we choose to have, These are all things that we need to consider, because these are influences that are around us. And especially in this case, because it was talking about, because these influences had other gods and idolatry and things that they brought with them. But that is the influences we could have today, too. It's different. Maybe not in the exact same sense, but the influence, there's a lot of idolatry going around. And there's, just very important for us to consider that. So the Lord said in 3:4, He's going to test them. So what is the result? What is the result of this test? So we know that we have to live in this world. But we don't have to be of this world. We don't have to partake in the things that it chooses to do. We have times that we have to be around the world, the worldly. And they basically live how they want to live. We know that we need to live how God wants us to live. So, yes, we might be influenced around people. We have to be around people at work. Sometimes we don't have a whole lot of choice on that part of it. But the things we get to do on our own time, we choose that. We choose what we do. We choose who we are around. So that's something for us to think about. So we do have to resist or exist around others. But what will prevail? Will it be the influence that's around us? Or will it be what we learn from God's Word? Will we serve the Lord? And another note, not just serving in appearance, but will we truly walk as we should? Remember, walk is this idea of our life, how we live. If you're familiar with this, what's Romans 12:12 say? Let's look over there. Well, that'd be great if I wrote the right verse. That's not what I was thinking of. I can't hear you. Anyway, so we see the idea of how we are to live, and I'll have to look that up and get down the right verse there. So I'll bring that up in the next class. But what about when we think about the parable of the sower of the seed? Look at Matthew 13, maybe, let's see. Matthew 13, see if I wrote this one down, right? Okay. So in Matthew 13:22 or Mark 4, similar idea. It talks about in the one on whom seed was sown among the thorns, this is the man who hears the word, and the worry of the world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful. Reason why I put that there is because we see the influences of other things around us. We see how they can have an effect on us. And as Christians, we can't let that happen. And not only can we not let that happen, we have to be alert and put ourselves in the position to be successful and, to be able to serve the Lord. So as we see in this section, it has to do with choice. And that's how the Lord was testing them. So it has to do with choice. So we have warnings. James 4:4. It says, you adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is hostility towards God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. And I put this here. Look, I'm not saying you can't have friends that aren't Christian. That's something you're going to have to figure out. But we definitely see that You know, there is something we have to think about because of their influence. And to me, at least my thought on it, this is who I want to be around. You know, I was thinking of that when Keith prayed, led us in prayer earlier. You know, we get the opportunity to be around one another each right now, to encourage one another and strengthen one another. We try to make opportunities sometimes to spend more time together, but we're not always around each other. Sometimes we're around influences that, you know, we don't even like that we have to be around them, but like I said, we have to be in the world. We have to work. So that's something that we need to consider. Who do we choose to be around? You know, because of wanting to have the same goals, wanting to serve the Lord. That's what's important. And as we saw, the Lord allowed those influences as a test. So they have these nations around them, these inhabitants that are going to have negative influences on them. So how is that going to affect them? So that's what we're seeing here. Then we'll get into section 6. This is the part we've been talking about as far as where we're going to start seeing some cycles happening. In chapter 3, verse 7, we're going to see some of these cycles happen. Now, on the lesson, I put Othniel delivers Israel from Cushan, Rishathaim, or something like it, king of Mesopotamia. So, how did Israel sin? I pose that question. How did Israel sin? What does it explain there? Or what does it describe? What terminology is used? I'm sorry, say it a little louder. Okay, so they forgot the Lord and served Baals. They did evil in the sight of the Lord. So, you know, how long did they serve Cushan? How many years?
8 years.
8 years. And this was because of the influence of the land. We see that was because of the influence of the land. If you look at Judges 3, verse 8, it says, "Then the anger of the Lord was kindled against Israel, so that he sold them into the hands of king of Mesopotamia. And the sons of Israel served Cushan, Rishathaim, 8 years." And according to verse 9, now we've talked about this before because Othniel was something that we saw in Joshua as well, as far as he was the nephew of Caleb. So Othniel is the nephew of Caleb. And now he's going to be raised up as a judge. And how long does it say that they had rest? 40 years. Okay. So they had rest all the way up until he died. There we go with that cycle again. So that cycle is going to start again. Now before we get into the next section, this one we're going to look at your chart. So if you haven't filled out your chart, the section we're looking at right now is number 1 of the chart. And we're also going to see number 2 of the chart in chapter 3. So let's get our chart out. In the section that's labeled sin, we already said what that was. It was, I noted verse 7, did what was evil, forgot the Lord, and served the Baals and the Asheroth. So, when does it speak of their suffering? What verse do you see where it talks about their suffering? You could say verse 8. So, verse 8 said, anger of the Lord. So, what's he do? He sells them. And now they're under this king of Mesopotamia. And they served him 8 years. So we can put our on the suffering part and the salvation part. I suggest that you can write there how many years, because each one of these, it's also going to say how long that they suffered and then how long that they had this salvation or were under this judge that the Lord sent or raised up. Where do we see this idea of supplication? Okay, right after. So verse 9. Okay. So verse 9, they cried out to the Lord. And in that same verse, the Lord raised up a deliverer. That was Othniel, as we said. And then, as we also said, that they had rest for 40 years. They had rest for 40 years. And then, right after the rest for 40 years, same verse, it says that he died. And then, next verse, here we go again. And we can answer our second section of our chart, number 2. Number 2 is covered under 312 through 30. 312 through 30. It says, now this is going to give away one of the answers, but Ehud delivers Israel from Eglon, the king of Moab. And how long did Israel serve Eglon? Verse 14 gives us the answer. 18 years. And the land was undisturbed for how many years? 80. A long time. 80 years it was undisturbed. So on the chart, under sin, we can write down verse 12, where it says, again, they did evil. Again, they did evil. And then for the suffering part, that's I put 12b through 14. 12b through 14. The Lord strengthened Eglon to the king of Moab. And then he gathered Ammon and Amalek, and they served him for 18 years, as we saw. And then in verse 14, as far as sin, I mean supplication, sorry, going to make this confusing. Supplication, again, you see the term, they cried out. They cried out to the Lord. And in 15, again, he answers that cry. He raises up a deliverer, which was Ehud. And we mentioned in one of our past classes, there was something that was mentioned about Ehud where he was different. What was that? Okay, he was a left-handed judge. And in verse 30 says, like we just looked at, the land was undisturbed for 80 years. 80 years. Then we get into our last section, which is we're going to go through real quick because it's one verse. Chapter 3, verse 31. Talks about the next judge. Remember when we were listing the judge, we noted that there's some that aren't going to be on this chart because there's not a lot of things that are mentioned about them. These here we're putting on this chart because we see this pattern, this cycle, if you will, the four S's, sin, suffering, supplication, and salvation, because in these, we see that with all of them. We'll have an exception to that on the last one, but so that's why we have this chart, and again, this was a chart I borrowed from Steve, but this is good. This really helps us to be able to, especially once we finish this chart, we're going to be able to see this cycle that's just going over and over and over. But in 3:31, it talks about Shamgar. It says that he delivers Israel from the Philistines. That's, with the exception of chapter 5, he is mentioned again, but it's really not to give any detail about him as a judge. But 3:31, it says, after him came Shamgar, the son of Anath, who struck down 600 Philistines with an ox goad. And he also saved Israel. So, and we won't go into a lot of detail, but with this ox goad, it's basically, it was a tool used to goad ox, or to prod, move ox. I don't see a lot of detail on description of that, but I know there's other things where you can kind of get an idea of that, but it doesn't give any information right here. But we see that he used this tool, and he struck down 600 Philistines with it. He must have just been real good, huh, at what he did. Or we think about when we defined these deliverers, God was with them. That's why he had success. That's why he was able to strike down 600 Philistines with this stick. So, do we have any other questions for Judges 1 through 3? See, we're going to make it to 4 through 5. Any other questions or thoughts to bring up about this section? Okay, well, let's remember to continue to fill out our chart at the top of it. It says what sections are going to be covered, you know. So we're going to have section 3 to cover in this next class as we look over Judges 4 through 5. So Judges 4 through 5. We're going to break this down into four sections. We'll see in 4, 1 through 3 that Israel did evil again after Ehud died. Judge dies. There's our cycle again. And then they apostatized, and the Lord allowed Jabin, king of Canaan, to oppress them. So remember this, what we're saying right now, this is some of our information on our chart. So that's the things that we'll see. In 4 through 10, we're going to see Deborah summons Barak and convinces him to lead the battles against Sisera, the commander of Jabin's army. And then in 11 through 24, we see Jabin's army conquered. Sisera slain by Jael, the wife of Heber. And once we get into it, we're going to kind of break it down into like a subsection from 17 to 22, because we'll see more things that are more detail that is given about this, how Sisera was slain by this woman. So we will break that down a little bit further. And then the last section will be chapter 5, 1 through 31, where it talks about Deborah and Barak's song of victory and praise, which is covered under chapter 5. So remember, as you're reading over these things, as you're reading these chapters to prepare for class, get out your chart. You know, ask the question, where am I seeing this sin? Where am I seeing this suffering, the supplication, the salvation, and fill out the information on this chart. It'd be helpful to you, something good to keep. So section 1. Again, this pattern or cycle. So it says, like we just said, the sons of Israel again did evil in the sight of the Lord. So, when does this happen? What caused this them to do this evil again? Who died? Okay. So again, we see this idea: the deliverer, the judge. They die, and then here goes the cycle again. So after Ehud died is when we see this cycle. And, you know, just to remember, that's what we saw in 2:19. It was talking about this cycle going over and over, and the judges, and after they died, that's what happened. And 4:1, just remember, go ahead and put that on your chart, you know, because that's what we see in 4:1. While we're reading over that, again, they did evil. That was sin. Now, what does the Lord do because of their apostasy? Because they were abandoning the Lord's ways. What did He do? How did He react to that? I know you have the answer. I just can't hear it. Say it again. Okay. Yes, ma'am. He sold them into the hand of the king of Canaan. That's correct. You know, so they chose to follow this path. This is what it resulted in. The Lord sold them into the hand of Jabin, the king of Canaan. And how long did Jabin oppressed Israel? 20 years. Okay? So 20 years. Verse 3b. And it said not only did he oppress them, but he oppressed them severely. So it describes this severe oppression, which causes something. You know, so this is describing this suffering. So verses 2 and 3 are going to talk about this suffering you can put on your chart. And then we're going to, in 3a, is talking about their supplication. So it said they cried out to the Lord. They cried out to the Lord. And again, the Lord's going to answer that. When we get into verses 4 through 5, it describes Deborah. So who is Deborah? What does the verse tell us about her? Are there some things we can learn? Okay. So she was a prophetess. She was a judge. That's one of the things I put down, prophetess. And, you know, some of these sections, I'm looking at different versions. So if you have the Young's Literal Translation, it says that she's a woman inspired. So a prophetess or a woman inspired. We also learn that she's a wife. She's the wife of Lapidoth. She's a judge, as Sally said. She was judging Israel at that time, we see in 5b. And the sons of Israel came up to her for judgment. So that's some things we learn about her: a prophetess, a wife, a judge. Now, why did she summon Barak? Why did she summon Barak? I hear somebody speaking. Okay, he was a general. Why did she summon him? Okay. Good point. So, Don said that he was a general, and the other judges we've seen had the military background or might have had military, they were military leaders. And if you look at verse 6. Yes, sir, that's what we're going to get to. Verse 6 and 7. It says that, now, she sent and summoned Barak, the son of Abinom, from Kadesh Naphtali, and said to him, "Behold, the Lord, the God of Israel, has commanded. So as Steve said, that's why she did it. Because again, remember, she is a prophetess. So, behold, the Lord, the God of Israel, has commanded, go and march to Mount Tabor, and take with you 10,000 men from the sons of Naphtali and from the sons of Zebulun. And I will draw out to you Sisera, the commander of Jabin's army, with his chariots and with his many troops to the river Kishon, and I will give him into your hand. So the reason why she does this is because that's what the Lord wanted. She's doing what the Lord wanted, and she lets Barak know that, hey, this is God's plan for you. Now, she could have tried to usurp that authority, but she went to the general of the army, and she's going to use that, but like we stated, it's because that's what the Lord commanded. So what is Barak's response? What does he say when he hears this, that the Lord's commanded him to do this? That's right. Thank you, John. Only if you go, is what he said. Well, I'll talk about that in this verse 9. Put on there, what does verse 9 reveal? Okay, so she'll go with him. So I put a couple of different points on my notes that we could consider about verse 9. Correct. Because I have three different points I put on there, and that's one of them. That's good. Thank you, because that's important for us to see. Now in 9a, it says, Deborah said that she would surely go with Barak, because remember, that was his request. He said, I'll go if you go. And by her willingness to go with Barak, does that show something to him? By her willingness to go with him? Is she confident in what she's telling him is what the Lord is saying? Okay. So it shows her confidence. Of course, she knew this was coming from the Lord. She's got to convince Barak. But Barak said, if you go with me, I will go. And she does. She said, I will surely go with you. And they went. Now, if you remember when we looked back at in the past at Hebrews 11, Hebrews 11, 32, when it was talking about, when we were talking about, you know, some people consider Barak as a judge, and just to give a little information, we looked at this verse because it said, in 32b, for time will fail me if I tell of Gideon, which was a judge, Barak, Samson, a judge. So we see how he is put in this area with these judges, Jephthah, and then verse 33, who by faith conquered kingdoms. So Barak is going to conquer Jabin by faith. That's what's going to take place here. Now, after stating that Deborah would go with him, she also tells him something else. And this is what Don was saying. If you look in back in Judges, we look at 4:9b. 4:9b. So 9 has a lot of information. It says, nevertheless, because this is right after she said, I'll go with you, but nevertheless, the honor shall not be yours on the journey that you're about to take. 4, the Lord will sell Sisera into the hands of a woman. Then Deborah arose and went with Barak to Kadesh. And I put one more point. This prophecy concerning Sisera's death, which is also 9b, says that the Lord will sell Sisera into the hands of a woman. That's why it's not going to be his honor, Barak's honor. It said the Lord is going to sell Sisera into the hands of a woman. And then the verse ends in saying, you know, that Deborah arose and went with Barak to Kadesh. Only reason why I state that is, now Deborah is a woman, but that's not who we're talking about. As we get further in, we're going to see who this woman is. So just keep that in mind as we go further into looking at these verses. Yes, sir, John? Yeah. Could be something to consider. And you know, and what we definitely think about, do you have a question? Sorry, I'm scanning, I see something move. I don't know if somebody's raising a hand or what. Yes. So when we consider these things about Barak and what he was wanting, now again, like we looked at when he said, if you were to go with me, maybe that was for him to understand that, yes, what she's saying is, because remember, he's hearing it from her. Just something to consider. He's hearing it from her. So when she says this and he's like, okay, but if this is so, I'll go, but you got to go with me. By her agreeing, that proves that what she is saying is true. So, or at least would appear to be. So that's at least how I consider it. So just, but some good things to think about, you know, and definitely, you know, he learns that, yeah, it's going to be about you, but he still goes. So, some things to think about, and I see Keith back there about to buzz me. So we'll pick up in section 3 in our next class. If you haven't already grabbed one, I have section or Judges 6 through 8 in the back. So pick one of those up if you haven't already. Thank you for your good comments and your questions.